Hello, hello, welcome, welcome. Welcome to In and Out of Character, a role players podcast. I talk to people from all around in MMOs and tabletops. I talk to just regular players and creators and people who like to LARP and cosplay and all sorts of stuff. And all we are here to talk about is this weird, awesome hobby that we all love and share. And today I have Glimp. This episode, like the last one, was supposed to come out like a year ago, and I just never got around to do it. But Glimp and I, in this episode, gets to talk about how we came up with the designs for some of the characters that I was able to put in the game. So, sit back, relax, enjoy yourself, and I hope you like the show.
How have you been?
You know, pretty good, pretty good.
Yeah, no, the last time we did this, we had this, we had such a cool episode done. You and I had gotten to, not only talk about you as a role player and how you got into it, but we also had gone through and, like, done some actual creation for your tabletop, and I was super thrilled to share that, and I was looking around after the data wipe, and I was like, wait. Where is it? What happened? No. Yours is one of the first ones I found out was gone. And that was so sad. Yeah, when I got my hard drive back from my friend from my friend after he went through and tried to restore the files, yours was gone. I have another creator's whose was gone is gone. Oh, man. But it's so good to have you back.
I am happy to be back. That type of stuff does happen.
Mm-hmm. And it's lame, but it's okay. So, yeah, welcome back, Glimp. I've missed you. At least this gives me a reason to talk to you some more.
I mean, same. I am happy to be back.
How's things been in the tabletop world?
Really good. When did we last talk? Was that October or November?
Hold on. Yeah, actually, I can tell you right now, because I have this written down. It is in November, the very end of November.
All right. So yeah, it's been a while since then. We have, really kicked it into gear. I mean, most of the stuff was essentially complete at that point, except mm-hmm. some of the backer curated monsters. Mm-hmm. As of now, basically everything is good. We got the person who was doing a layout for the book had some other obligations, so we switched over to a new person, and they're basically have finished it off, but they just had this very compact design, and so we are adding some additional stuff that we originally thought we were going to have to cut for space. So that is very exciting. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the book is really, really close to being done.
I'm super thrilled. I'm super thrilled to get my hands on my copy of it. I'm also super thrilled to share the secrets, because I don't want to say it here. But I had done, I used my ability to create things as sort of like an Easter egg to other people.
Yes.
And I am so ready to get to finally share that.
I'm excited. I will share, so I can show you the screenshots of that laid out in the book.
Oh, that's so cool. I do have to once again get you to talk about your intro into role-playing games. Could you tell me a little bit more about that? I'm so bad at re-interviewing people. I am horrible at this.
I mean, that is fine. We'll figure it out. So yeah, I am Chris Pellick. I am a Chicagoland engineer, programmer, and game designer. Mm. I have about how fucking old am I now? I have about 12 years on and off in the game industry itself. I started with TTRPGs and role-playing of that sort when I was 10, because I was really into the X-Men and into comics. And there was a little game called Marvel Universe Role-Playing Game 2003. It was this diceless, very resource management-based TTRPG. I had no idea what that type of game was, but it looked cool. It was an imagination game, it seemed. It took me months to really figure out what the hell this type of game was. And then I later, about a year later, discovers Dungeons and Dragons through a little 2000, like the third edition starters kit that was on sales, clearance, whatever. And I did not put together that it was the same thing as the Marvel game for many years. And then I've been addicted to role-playing games, well, TTRPGs, ever since. I started game development, designing, hacking my own things, trying to make a Kingdom Hearts and Naruto D&D 3.5 version of when I was in middle school. Been playing around with mechanics ever since. Got into the video game industry while also working on my degree in college. Worked there for a while, took some time off, and now I'm back working on games in the tabletop space.
Yeah, you were just successful with Cerberus and Cottages. No, Cottages and Cerberus. I always start off wrong on that.
It's the place noun, then the monster noun.
It's such a... How... Because Cottages of Cerberus is what you call a cozy core game, right? You call it cottage core?
It's a cottage core. Cottage core is an aesthetic. It got really popular in the panorama we had in 2020 and a bit beyond. Where people were very isolated, cooped up away from nature, things are scary. Cottage Core is kind of a reference of being a bit more self-sufficient, but also very community-based. You make things, you do bartering, it's this coziness, connection with nature, kind of a response to minimalism, because it's kind of often a form of maximalism, lots of flowers and mushrooms aesthetically. And so that was kind of an aesthetic pitch for the type of game I was going. And then it kind of really worked well with what are called cozy games. Games that kind of maybe don't... I mean, because there are stakes. It's hard to say cozy games don't always have stakes, but sometimes they don't. Like, Animal Crossing is a very cozy game. It's a game that you can kind of just turn your mind off a bit. Just do some very menial task type game. That usually falls into the cozy category. I then had to put this with Monster Hunter because I thought it was funny. This was originally going to be a one-page pitch, and then I kept growing it, and then I actually liked it.
How did you decide on a cottagecore game for this? Like, how did you decide that you wanted to make a tabletop that was cozy?
Honestly, it's kind of just happened, and as I kind of, so I actually have this game I've been developing since 2019. On and off. And I decided that before I kind of really went hard on the version I hope to publish, I should just get something out there, a one-page RPG. And so I wrote this up. And it was kind of just a take two very different things and try to put them together. Animal Crossing, Monster Hunter, Cottage Core, Monster Slaying.
I love both of those things.
Exactly. And then it was like, oh, this is like peanut butter and chocolate. This really, these tastes go well together, really well. People might have not known them. It really fits. And then I kind of, so this was originally a really small game, and then I kind of developed it out based off of seeing it work. So I didn't have any genius game designer. This is perfect. It was me. I threw stuff to the wall and then took what was sticking.
That's fair. I don't blame you on that. Sometimes my mind just sort of, I try to plan out my projects the best I can, but at times I'm just like, does this work? No, this is dumb. And then I just go on to the next idea.
I think this maybe is something, I could maybe make an argument for something subconscious, also about the current zeitgeist of people arguing about what type of games we want to play nowadays. There's definitely is, there is discourse mostly in the online game, video game community about what is a real serious game, blah, blah, blah. I think there's something about these games that actually just make sense to go together.
I am curious, what are you thinking about what you're going to try to do after the cottagecore game?
I have 1, 2, 3. I have 3 things with the base rule sets written up and done and happy, and then I would just be able to write as much content as I feel would be necessary for the book. So I would have, and then I also have another possible license project that I'm trying to get off the ground. So I would have to choose one of those. I can tell you what about one. It is, or the original pitch was a Kingdom Hearts game, and then it kind of has since diverged into a anime battle game that is very much about asynchronous combat, where there is less waiting around, and there's a minor physical card component that happens that will be very interesting if I pursue that project further. But I have been trying very hard to just keep my mind focused on getting this project through the finish line.
Yeah, I bet you would be, because it's once you're knee deep into it. Like I'm doing a few things on my own, but it's just like it's hard to want to just keep going with with one project, because you have so many different ideas that you want to explore. It must be driving you insane to have to just stick to this one thing until you're done.
It's also very difficult because at this point, I am mostly not doing a job as a game designer with this project. I am very much being a project manager, a product owner in the tech space, you would call it, where I am just coordinating everything. I am making decisions about who's doing what, about signing off on final things, approving edits. I'm not designing anything, and it is really hard not to just jump into a new project.
No, I get that. With the amazing power that is ADHD, I have to work on 5 different things at once. So an example is I'm working on, not only am I always doing this podcast, I am also working on the website, which means I am learning my JavaScript and other shenanigans now. Yay. I am trying to direct another project because I want to do a documentary. I am audio dramatizing an actual play, which is a whole nother beast in and of itself. And I also want to do a series called Locations and Lore, where I go around MMOs and I talk about individual places where players could go and roleplay at. And I'm trying to get 5 of those episodes ready for launch right now.
Yeah, no, I very much get that as well. That is very much my default. But I'm trying to keep it controlled and just focused on this. And then also my various home games I run, we stream once a week. And then I have a day job, unfortunately. Actually, it's a pretty good day job, but I wish I could one day maybe a full-time game designer.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah, and not to like yourself with work. Ugh. Ah, gosh. Anyways, that's all to say that I was wondering how because we unfortunately we're not going to be able to go over all the stuff that I created organically anymore, right? Because we already did that, and yeah, can't do that. So, but like. When I was, how was it implementing the stuff that I gave you for the game?
It was, we actually, especially since we were talking, it came as we were doing it a lot of the other time, people would just give me a text description. I will type up bullet points and then I'll kind of just look at those bullet points and try to synthesize ideals. From that, for years, that was we were talking out loud, and I was kind of designing as we were talking, so it came out very smoothly. I am really excited to unleash this beast on a certain group I run.
Yeah.
Your monster came out very
clean. Your game will probably be out before this episode comes out. So
let's see. We are so the as of time of recording, we are on Game Fund, we are using it as a pledge manager, so basically a chance to collect late pledges, and is how we are collecting shipping. The game, so we are hoping the PDF's gonna be released in like a month and a half. It was a bit behind schedule. We had some changes of who was able to do some work. Scheduling and stuff got really more busy than we expected during the holiday, so things got pushed back a bit. But yeah, I am really thinking we probably will, backers will get an initial PDF beginning of March, and then we'll have a few weeks of collecting changes, and then we will send it off to the printer.
Hey, yeah, so this will probably be coming out mid-April, so players will have their PDFs by the time this episode comes out.
Yeah, that is very exciting. Oh god, it's close.
Oh yeah, so people can go through the rule book and find all the stuff that we're talking about. I'm very, very thrilled to hear about the reception of this game, because I feel like Cottage Core hasn't been something that's really been done before. Maybe there have been tabletops that are sort of like home building or something like that, but the idea of like a monster hunting cottage game, like just nice, cozy roleplay with some boss mechanics, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about this before throughout the internet. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to design a game that appealed to different people for different reasons, and then you can pull these people who have different motivations and different likes in games, and then everyone still gets that at the table, and I think they're pretty good. Like, this is a game where you can really just do a very light, just focus on role-playing. You can run serious games, you can just focus on monster hunting, etc., etc. But I think a big part is really the branding. Buzzwords, but yeah, how we are selling the game changes the mindset you have when you go in the game. And I think that is kind of a way to trick people into playing games in different ways, and I think it's gonna work.
I'm banking on it, man. Listen, I'm hoping this thing takes off really well, because I want more things like this in the world. I want a game that's just like, you know, it's gonna be okay in the end. You know what I mean? I know that's really dumb to say,
but I think it's that is really I'm trying to remember when we made this change, but there is no falling unconscious in this game unless you want there to be. Our HP, we call them spoons. It is based off of spoons theory, which is a kind of a meta. How it's a metaphor to explain mental health, living life originally with chronic pain. Uh-huh. And it's the ideal was when you have chronic pain, you have a bit less spoons, and spoons are used to do everything. So that is our health mechanic. It is physical and mental capacity. Yes.
Spoons. I remember the spoons.
When we make rolls, you can sometimes spin a spoon to turn a failure into a success, kind of representing having to push a bit extra hard. You also lose spoons from taking damage. At zero spoons, you do not go unconscious. You simply make all checks with what we call misfortune. So you make your regular check, and then you re-roll every dice that succeeds without getting into the nitty-gritty of the dice mechanics. Mm. It's bad. It really decreases your chance of succeeding ever. When all the players have zero spoons, you have to retreat. But so there can still be bad outcome, but there's no death. There's no even unconscious. You still get to play. It's a very different way of approaching games. It's also does mean the monsters hit a bit harder than you expect them to. Passages in Cerberus, but I questioned it, and I was like, this has been living nonstop in my head for a year. Yeah, Cartages and Cerberus. Yeah, there are... this is a lot of TTRPGs really struggle with bosses. They do not do them well at all, because there's a lot of reasons. The main thing gets called the action economy. The idea that you have... Every player has a number of actions, and each monster has the same number of actions. A boss is usually one versus many. So the boss gets just absolutely dogpiled. Cartages and Cerberus. So I am... there's a joke that if I had, like, another year of college, I would have come out with, like, 3 degrees and 10 more minors, because I had several things where I was, like, one class away from getting it as an extra major or minor. I have a mathematics minor, and I was a class away from being having a math major. So the math here is very much balanced of there's one guy fighting a bunch of little guys. The boss kind of moves more often. Before the fight starts, he has an opener, a special ability. Then the fight actually starts, and guess what? The boss gets to go again. End of the round, the boss has another special ability called a closer that automatically targets based off the condition in the fight. And so this is part of this, like, very tight math that keeps it so these monsters really hit hard, but you usually still win.
Yeah.
Just, let's see, I'm trying to find a good random example of something that, okay, this guy isn't terrible. There is a monster called the Shell Spike. He's just a big turtle with a spiky shell. He might deal 4 damage with his opener, and then he might do 4 more damage to every character on round 1. You start with 10 health. Uh-huh. That's a lot of damage. You are you go into your first turn with 2 health. That's kind of the way the game is balanced.
Unfortunately, we can't get to go through everything and recreate it. But what I would like to do, if you don't mind, is and this will give people a reason to kind of go through the book. So we already talked about Weretox, the thing, the boss I made for you, right?
Yes.
Let's. What about the pet? What was that? How was that like in the book? And what do pets do in your book?
Yeah, so I think we can just really quickly go through character creation. Kind of a big guiding thing is that character creation isn't necessarily complicated, but you have a spoil of options. So we have for your base attributes, your strength, dexterity, we have calm, your charm, alchemy, lore, and muscle. You then, and those are just numbers at level 1, ranging from 1 through 4. Then you choose 3 abilities from about 300. They come in different styles, like we have spells, we have actions, which I think of as Final Fantasy-style job commands. We have, did I say passives? We have some, yeah, there's a few different types.
Mm-hmm,
you then choose your vibe. Your vibe is your general... It's basically what restores you. So the classic example is a extrovert is restored when they start regain spoons, when they start a scene with other people in it.
You're right.
And there's about 50 of those. And then finally, you make a magic item or you choose a pet. At later levels, you can unlock additional slots to have more items and pets. You curated, that starts with the pets you curated, which is the pet rack. And I actually really like this guy. I believe he is possibly one of the longer pets in the game. So...
Mm-hmm. Because I was just like, Pet Rock, homie. I built him. Them. They are a reference to the Roleplay Rejects.
And as I'm pulling something up to send you just privately, the Roleplay Rejects, that was the first time that as far as I know, that someone played the game without me being there. And so it was a major confidence boost to see them just getting everything about the game, just understanding it as a game designer for this specific type of game where you're writing the rulebook. It's always nerve-wracking of, did I actually write the game the way I play it?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, no, they got it. The rules seem simple. So you made the pet rock. Pets have similar stats as a player, as a character. They have spoons. Technically, it is labeled as health. They only start with 5, though. Then they usually have 2 in every calm stat. And then they have a bunch of abilities. The pet rock, which I just sent you an image of the pet rock laid out, has 3 abilities.
I love it so much.
Telepathy. Teleportation. Which just references the teleportation ability. And then the decorative accessory, basically between adventures, the pet rat can equip one of five accessories, each one giving it a different ability. So you might give it a battle axe to increase its muscle, or let's see, you'll see there's some things that my editor cut, but like the tap hat's going to make it a more charming rock. The bow tie gives it healing, gives it magic ability, so it gives healing and a spell.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. I fucking love this rock so much. I can't tell you how proud I am of this rock.
It's a really fun one. It's also like the really fun things about doing the high level backer stuff was collaborating with other people, because at this point I had written some of them got cut, so I've written about 170-ish monsters and maybe 40 to 50 pets, with a good amount of them being cut for various reasons. And that design space was really feeling a bit small, and then just working with other people, I really was like, oh, here's some more ways I can do something interesting. The pet rock having its kind of own miniature items it can choose from is really cool. It is really fun.
I love it so much. It is just such a simple little idea, and it works out so well, because you're just like, all right, little rock, I'm going to take off this hat and give you this little battle axe.
It's also giving me, like, major Barbie vibes in the best way. Like, just like, here's an accessory, and it's really funny. It's also like, I feel like it hits one of the tones of the game really well.
I'm rather proud of us.
Then the next one is the special stuffed animal.
Oh, yes, the stuffed animal. I had a lot of fun with that one.
So the lore that I wrote with this is essentially, unlike most magic items, where like you study magic and learn how to craft and yada yada, the special stuffed animal basically is enchanted from the belief of a child originally. That was how it gained the magic in the first place. I think it's something that a lot of players might end up choosing. It's very thematic. It allows you once per scene, so the game is broken up like into different scenes each session. You can use a reaction to essentially re-roll a dice. Re-roll an entire check.
Yeah.
And then I am going to send you a bonus picture. The picture is actually put near the animated plushie, so similar, but just a bonus picture for you.
Oh, I love it. I love it so much. Because this was based off of my very own stuffed animal. Yes, I have a stuffed animal, everybody. I've had him since I was my son's age, 5 years old. His name is Dog Dog, and I'll share a picture out there on the Twitter and stuff like that. But on the Twitter, on the threads or wherever I need to. I've had him since I was 5, and he's survived every single ordeal I've had to go through. So I have just kept him the best I can. He's right up here, my dog. He survived a burning house with he survived one of my homes burning down. He survived Katrina. He survived just all the homes I had to go to. Wild to think that he's in a book now.
I mean, yeah, like, we were talking about that, and I was like, there's definitely something, like, because I have some very sentimental plushies from my childhood. My partner has her Blinky that she's had since she was one. Technically, the original Blinky only made it, but she had, right after she came into this period, did not make it a full year. The second Blinky has made it since then. I feel like this is a very common thing, and so, I mean, thank you for, like, kind of trusting me to, like, design something around that. That was, it was a challenge in the best way. I think we made something really special. Cute, bit sentimental. I think it's decently powerful. And I think people, I think it will be one of the more popular items. A big thing that I might even say this was a design, one of the things I might change if I ever do a second edition, is saying you have to choose a pet or an item, because people just choose pets. Pets are a bit more powerful, and people just really like animal companions.
Uh-huh.
So that is, like, I think people usually choose a pet over an item most of the time, but I think the stuffed animal is going to be one of the more popular items when people choose them.
I think it's great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Of course.
And was there one more? What else was there?
There was the cozy callings. So cozy callings were,
Oh, right.
You did the chef, yes.
Hey, I did the chef.
And that was just very simple. Cozy callings are essentially, the ideal is that this is supposed to be a simple game with in-depth character customization.
Mm-hmm.
Cozy callings are basically kind of ways to make your character a bit simpler. They give you some backstory questions that you can ask as you make their backstory, and then some relevant character options to choose from. And so the chef, some of the questions. Who taught you to cook? Did you have formal training? What types of food do you love to cook? When you cook, are there any smell or dishes that trigger certain memories? Is there anything you dislike cooking? What type of emotions, if any, does cooking bring you? And so you could answer these to kind of start building out your backstory. Then it also gives 3 suggested character abilities. Chef, which gives you a bonus on cooking checks. Legendary Chef, which allows you, every item has a quality, it allows you to make legendary quality food items. You cannot by default make legendary quality items. And then multi-recipe tasking, which lets you cook 2 things at one time. And yeah, I believe that was 4 things.
Yep.
Yes.
I most of my starting jobs are cooking. I think that's the reason why I might have chosen the chef.
That makes a lot of sense.
I don't know why. I don't know if cooking is everybody's first foray into the workforce, but it was definitely mine.
Mine was digging holes.
Hey!
Good manual labor. I've done food service, never done anything behind, like, in the kitchen there, so... Not everyone.
Well, thank you again for going on this wonderful journey with me. I am super, super duper sorry that we had to re-again come together and converse about all this.
You know what? It was a good conversation, so I'll take it. This type of thing does sadly happen in these types of fields.
So before we go, because we're getting close to the hour mark and my child just refuses to chill out, do you have any advice for anyone wanting to get into tabletops out there? Not like as a role player, but as a developer?
Yeah. Most important thing is really to do it. You have to, especially if you don't have experience in other related industries, other versions of game design. Do it, start small-ish. There is kind of some common wisdom of start with what are called one-page RPGs. Only if you want to. But do start with a bite-sized project. Or just assume if you start with something bigger that you probably are going to throw it all away and start with another game. But the most important thing, start small, put things out there. We have, especially nowadays, so many options. Itch.io, great way you can just put up free stuff. There's lots of game design forums where you can just put your things off. Really having to polish something for public consumption is one of the hardest skills game designers often face, because they often complete their game and then try to do that, and that's stupid. You really need to focus on this iterative design, getting used to actually getting things out there. Yeah, I mean, it's cliche, but I think it's very active. Rely on your friends, find a design group. This game, basically, I have a group of friends. We do monthly-ish, maybe seasonal-ish game design chats, and this game started there. So I think having a community is a real big part of this.
Well, Gleb, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate you being here.
Of course. Thank you for having me again.